Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 19, Episode 4.
This is Writing Excuses.
Pacing with Fonda Lee.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lun.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Dan.
So we're here this week with our guest host, who was a guest instructor on the 2023 Writing Excuses Workshop and Retreat, Fonda Lee. Fonda is one of my very favorite speculative fiction writers. She's the author of the Greenbone Saga, starting with Jade City, which is probably my favorite fantasy series of the past decade. And so with that tough introduction, I'm going to toss it over to Fonda Lee to talk about herself for a second.
I don't know if there's anything else to say, Dong Lun. Thank you very much for that introduction. I'm delighted to be back on Writing Excuses. As Dong Lun mentioned, I'm the author of the Greenbone Saga, as well as a number of science fiction novels. My most recent work is a novella called Untethered Sky.
So when we decided to have you on the podcast, there was one topic that I immediately jumped to that I wanted to hear you talk about, because I think one of the strongest things about Jade City and the other Greenbone books is the incredible pacing of those books. They are very action-oriented, there's a lot of tension, but you also know how to lean into a character moment, sort of luxuriate in two people having a conversation, or even just a character walking down the street in the way that that can create tension as danger escalates in those moments. So I'm going to toss it over to you to talk a little bit about how you think about pacing and what are some tools that our audience can use.
I love talking about pacing because I think it's a topic that isn't covered quite as frequently in writing conferences, writing classes. And one of the reasons is because it is so incredibly subjective and dependent on the genre, the subgenre, the category, the length of the work, the tone, the author voice, all of these things play into pacing and what the right pacing is for a story. If you go on to Goodreads and you pick any book, almost certainly you will find a 5-star review that says, "This book was gripping, I couldn't put it down." And you will almost certainly find a 1-star review that says, "This was so boring, I couldn't finish it." And that is because so much of the pacing is dependent on reader expectations. So I like to think of pacing not just as the speed of the story, which is what I think a lot of people automatically assume it is. Instead, I think of pacing as the sequence of events, the prose style, the rhythm, and the level of tension in the narrative that affect the reader's perceived unfolding of that story. So think of it as the soundtrack of your story.
Yeah, I love you talking about it in those terms, because inside industry circles, the other reason I wanted to bring this up is I feel like it's one of the aspects of writing that I understand least well, because inside industry circles, we use a truly terrible term where we say, "That book is pacey," or "That book is not pacey," right? Which is a terrible way to say it, but I don't know why we do it that way. Anyways, people are constantly telling me that, like, "Oh, that's not pacey enough," or "That book is very pacey." And I'll read it and I'll be like, "I found this to be a very tense experience," or, you know, so there is that subjectiveness that comes into it. So when you're thinking about how to increase that tension, how do you target what readership you're going for and make sure for that audience, it's like pulling them through the experience in the right way?
Yeah, that's a really good question to ask, because you have to first ask yourself, what are the conventions of your genre and category, and what are your readers going to expect? So if you're writing for adult literary fiction audience, they're going to have a very different expectation of pacing than if you're writing a middle grade fantasy novel. So that's the first thing to know, is that you have to work within the expectations of your readership. And you're only going to know that by reading a lot within that category or that genre and understanding what conventional pacing is within the field that you're working in. But also remember that the way that you just used pacing, pacey, right, which is essentially saying it's a faster story, is not always right. It's not always appropriate for that work. And that advice, I think, also comes oftentimes because beginning writers are told you have to hook the reader right at the beginning. You have to attract the agent, you have to attract the editor, and so they default to trying to make the beginning of their story as fast-paced as possible, when that may not be the most appropriate beginning to their story. So pacing is so inextricably tied to structure that you can really think about controlling pacing as controlling structure. And if you have a good understanding of the structure of your work, the beats that are expected, the rhythm of which you want to unroll your story, you're a good way of the way towards controlling pacing.
That's a really interesting way of phrasing that, because when I was coming in, I was very good at character, but the thing that I had trouble with was structure. And then after that, I felt like the thing that I had to learn was pacing, and that I'm only just starting to get a grasp on how to control it. Like, I had an understanding as a reader of what I wanted to see, but how to manipulate it was slower in coming. So I'm wondering, like, what tools, when you're trying to speed something up or slow something down, what tools are you using?
Yeah. And I think a really key part of your question is also the slowing things down. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes people think of pacing in terms only of speeding things up. And oftentimes beta readers or your critique partners will give you the feedback, there's too much going on. And to me, that is code for you need to look at pacing. And you may be trying to move too many things into a scene, and slowing things down is actually going to help your reader. So in terms of the tools that you asked about for speeding things up, one of the ways that I think about speeding things up is being as economical as possible with description, with dialogue, and with exposition. So you are going, there's a few things that you can think about. One is, first of all, how do you make your scenes do multiple jobs? And if you want to increase the pace of a particular part of your story, you can do that by accomplishing more and layering those ingredients into a scene. So let's say you have an action scene that's going on. You also want to reveal a bit of character in that scene. You want to have a tense moment that while the action is going on, a bit of dialogue that's going to increase the tension there. And you're going to cut out all the extraneous stuff that might slow your reader down. One thing also, just very tactically, is that your reader is going to move more quickly through prose when there's more white space on the page. So even something like the way that you put together your sentences to be more economical, to create more white space on the page, to create make the eye move faster, is going to increase the speed at which your reader processes. The other thing, too, is look at dialogue. Dialogue can be a fantastic way to control the pacing of your story, especially making it feel almost artificially fast and punchy. If you look at some really good screenwriters, like Aaron Sorkin, for example, or you know, a movie like Glengarry Glen Ross, if you actually think about what happens in that movie, not that much, but it feels very fast-paced because of the dialogue of the characters, the really snappy, witty way that they talk. And the piece of advice here to remember is, you don't try to write realistic dialogue. Realistic dialogue, normal people talking, is full of tangents. We go in weird directions. We have all these fillers. But look at really great script writers and the way they write dialogue and the way that increases the speed at which their scenes unfold. Now, going to the other side of that question, the how do you slow a scene down, that is actually a really good thing that sometimes you need to do in order to give your story breathing room. Oftentimes, books that are fast-paced suffer from having action scene after action scene after action scene, where the characters can't process what's happening, and as a result, the reader doesn't have time to process what's happening. So one of the things that I like to do in my own work is making sure those high-tension scenes, those high-action scenes are spaced out in a way that the characters have these quiet moments in between. So they have a chance to process what's happened. You can get an interiority in with those characters, and that creates this sort of ebb and flow of tension.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the common pitfalls that writers run into when trying to manage the pacing of their work.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge, and I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
So my thing of the week is a short story collection. And the reason why I want to highlight this is because one of the best ways to get a lot of different examples of pacing is to read short stories. Oftentimes in a novel, there are many ebbs and flows, and so the novel has varied pacing throughout. Short stories, you can really get a snapshot of different types of pacing by reading a bunch of short stories together. So the anthology that I want to highlight is a little self-serving. It is The Book of Witches, edited by Jonathan Strawn and out by Harper Voyager. I have a story in it, as well as many other fantastic speculative fiction authors, and it is out in time for Halloween, so check that out. Book of Witches.
Okay, Dan, I believe you had something.
I just wanted to go back to something Fonda said at the very beginning about how we often think of pacing as being speed, and it isn't necessarily that. When someone says a book is boring, it's not because nothing's happening in it necessarily. It's because there's nothing compelling or interesting to pull them through. People don't need just like constant explosions. They need something that they are fascinated by, that they are interested in, that they want to know more about. And so, you know, people always tell me that, you know, my John Cleaver books, for example, are paced very well and are paced very quickly. The first several scenes of I Am Not a Serial Killer, like nothing happens. The first scene, the hook for that book is just a really kind of slow embalming where he talks to his mom and his aunt. Nothing is happening. There's no real danger, but there is a lot of emotional tension and a lot of conflict between the characters and a lot of kind of intriguing world-building stuff and all of these other things. It is compelling to read through, even though really nothing's going on until, like, chapter four.
By contrast, I have had people say that the opening to Relentless Moon is slow because it starts with a literal explosion.
Yep.
Yep. It just goes to show.
But my character is like, oh, I know how to handle this because she's an astronaut. So she's chill about it, and I think that affects people.
Yeah, I think the thing that I see most commonly when somebody's trying to write a really fast-paced book or somebody's trying to be really commercial is they'll do a bunch of action scenes back-to-back or just start in action. But to me, that can end up feeling very slow, either because of something Mary Robinette's mentioned, which is the character is so competent in the moment, or because we don't know the characters yet. So you don't have those individual character stakes, right? There's nothing that's really putting them at threat in sort of a core identity way. And for me, that's where a lot of tension comes from. And so sometimes just throwing someone into a situation where survival is the question can feel ironically less tense and less driving than a scene where a relationship is at stake, which could be as slow as a conversation mm-hmm. with family members.
Yeah. Yeah. The question I always keep in mind is, at any given time, are there things happening that are crucial to the narrative? Those don't just have to be external plot things. And especially if you're thinking of the release and buildup of tension throughout a story, you're going to have times when, let's say there's a scene where something has been resolved in your external plot, but that resolution scene has a buildup of tension on an interpersonal subplot. So you're always thinking of the ebb and flow of tension throughout. And if you're releasing tension in one area, are you building it in another area? And keep the reader anticipating change. I think that's the key thing when it comes to maintaining that tension. Is it could be a very minor character moment. It could be a conversation that's just between two family members in a quiet room, but it could feel very tense because the reader is anticipating that whatever is happening is going to change something.
Yeah, I love that thought about ebb and flow for two reasons. One is that I sometimes do think about sort of pacing as being in a car, you know, that sort of metaphor. And oftentimes you will not realize how quickly you're going until you slow down. You know, you don't realize the speed until something changes. And then that change makes you realize, well, actually, like, we all got used to being on a boat, and now the boat is moving a lot more today, and we are feeling that change, y'all. So, you know, that is the thing that really lets you know that a pacing is happening.
Yeah.
I also think that you can change the distance between when you're having, like, something is introduced and then resolved. If things are introduced and resolved really quickly, that feels faster paced than if you introduce something and it takes a while for it to resolve. And so having those, that's another way to make something feel, I think for me, faster or slower paced.
Yeah. And being able to direct, control, and then twist your reader's expectations creates variation in the pacing, which is interesting to them and will keep them compelled because, you know, a monotonous dance track that's very fast paced is still boring, right? If you are the DJ of this soundtrack of your story, you want to be switching things up so that, you know, you're moving seamlessly from song to song, but it's not just one continuous beat. Even if it's fast-paced, it's going to get dull.
I was watching an interview the other day with the guy who did the highest parachute jump ever. You remember the guy a few years ago? He went up into low Earth orbit and jumped. And what was fascinating to me is he said for the first long while of that, it didn't feel like he was falling at all. It just felt like floating there. This is this incredible thing. He's like something like 160,000 feet. And he said it didn't feel like falling. It wasn't exciting. It was just floating. And that's because there wasn't enough atmosphere. There wasn't enough to react against. And so it wasn't, like Aaron said, there wasn't change of speed. There wasn't, the sign of something going on. It was just nothing.
I love that idea. I love that image that it's the variation is, the change in rhythm is, the use of negative space. All of these things are what's helping move your reader through the story at the speed that you want them to and keep them engaged throughout. So, Fonda, thank you so much for joining us. I believe you have our homework this week.
I do. Your homework this week is to take a page of a story that you're working on, and I want you to first try to speed it up. So cut the description, be very tight with dialogue, and try to make this as fast-paced a scene as you can. Then I want you to do the opposite. So give the characters a lot more time, include more content, more interiority, more exposition, more world building, and slow the pace down, make it a more extended scene. And then compare those two versions, see how they feel and which one serves your story better.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
We love hearing about your successes. Have you sold a short story or finished your first novel? Tell us about it. Tell us about how you've applied the stuff that we've been talking about. Use the hashtag WXSuccess on social media or drop us a line at success@writingexcuses.com.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.